dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello, everybody. Once again, you are listening to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 170. 170 episodes of our weekly radio show about hacking, technology, and all the other fun-related things that go along with it. Today is, let's see, October 24th, 2006 is when this is airing. And you know something? I'm going to start off the show. People who have listened to the show from the beginning or for a long time know that I have a tendency sometimes to get corny about things and try to keep a whole positive outlook on hacking and what the quote-unquote community is all about. And I don't know, I kind of, maybe I'm sentimental or maybe I'm just, I don't know, whatever I am, but I kind of have been having this little thought process lately of how much fun I've been having hacking again lately. I've actually been getting some time to do things and getting back involved in projects and working with other people on projects and even better yet, you know, watching other people develop their projects and maybe helping out, giving advice and watching the community put a lot of cool things out. So, I mean, it seems to be meshing back together now. There's not so much drama mixed in. And it just kind of got me thinking and realizing that hacking is starting to be fun again. I mean, I've said on the show many times before that hacking is about learning. It's about educating yourself. It's about educating others. It's about laughing and having fun and enjoying things. You know, if you're out on a website and hacking away at something or researching something or trying tricks on things, hey, will this work? Hey, I wonder if I can do that. You know, you should be on the phone. If you're not laughing out loud, calling somebody on the phone and going, yo, not theory, dude, check this out, look what I just found, you know, hey, Bland Inquisitor, check this out, you'll never believe what I found. If you're not excited about what you're doing and you're not enjoying what you're doing and you're not laughing and sharing with other people and having fun, if you're not, I guess that's the short answer, the short way to say it, if you're not having fun while hacking, you're not doing it right. You're doing something wrong because hacking is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be something you learn from and something that you enjoy doing. If it's work and drama and fighting and arguing and putting people down and all this attacking each other and negativity, you're not hacking. No matter what you think, no matter what you may do, you're not hacking. It's just not what hacking is supposed to be all about. And you know, my co-host on the show this week, you know, I think epitomizes that more than anyone I know. You know, maybe that's why I'm kind of verklempt for this episode of the show, is because co-hosting the show with me is someone that I've been good friends with for a long, long time in the hacking scene. Someone who I meet up with at conferences quite a few times a year. We talk on the phone quite regularly. Sometimes we'll go through little phases less where we talk less than others, but Dual Parallel is joining me on the show again today. So Dual, and possibly, now correct me if I'm wrong, we might possibly have an appearance by Mrs. Parallel as well?
Yeah, she's here right now.
We might get a bonus appearance, a bonus co-host
on the
episode.
Okay, I gotta say, that's like the fourth DTMF I've heard. Are you like, is your like foot on the speakerphone? What's
no,
going on?
No, my phone is still sends random DTMF tones out every
serious?
Once in a while.
Really?
So.
That's really cool.
I don't
what
hear them.
Feature.
Yeah, I don't hear them. Only people on the other line hear them, but yeah, I know
that's
they exist.
One. What the hell?
I don't know. I think it interprets. No, I think it interprets the numbers. I think it interprets my voice and turns them into touchstones.
Theodore Kalkos. Stop that.
Uh-oh.
Okay, hold on here.
Hi, Snake.
Welcome to the show, Mrs. Parallel. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
I know.
For having me on today.
I know that we're keeping you away from your Yu-Gi-Oh! And your Pokemon.
Actually, it's Naruto, but that's okay.
Naruto, excuse me.
Yes.
But I actually know who that one is. I saw that on the DVD rack. That's the kid with the goggles and the orange vest or something, I think, right?
Yes.
Yes, I know who it is. I've never watched it, but, you know, you Japanimation extremists.
It's Duel's fault. He
I
got
know.
Me into it, so I just blame him for everything.
Well, yeah, that pretty much works around here, too. That's a pastime. It's Duel's fault.
It is Duel's fault.
Anyway, how about any housekeeping we want to do at the top of the show? You got anything for us?
Me?
Yeah, you're on the show.
Housekeeping.
Any news you want to announce? Any, what kind of hacking have you been...
Any news, honey? Remove me?
No.
No, nothing.
No, we don't have anything that we're announcing. We've already been married. No kids. Nothing like that.
Okay, well, yeah, I think, I don't know if we ever actually made that public information. I think Mrs. Parallel infers the marriage at this point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we got married quite some time, about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah,
so.
Yep.
It's been a while. I think most of the people in the community know who I am.
Well, and, you know, we've met up at... I meet up with you as often as I meet up with Duel because we were in Vegas this past
yes.
year, and we were in... Where did we... New York last... 2 years ago, was it?
Yes,
3 years?
That is correct. I was there.
So... She's around and in the scene as well, maybe more
I
than Duel.
I actually go to 2600 meetings with them as well. So.
Do you really? You didn't tell me. I didn't know you started going to the meetings.
I do. I go every so often. It's actually a really nice group. They welcome me, even though I'm not technical, per se, but I can hack in my own.
You use
Linux.
You use security.
Scientific Linux.
Yeah, you use...
It forces me to, but I use it.
Yeah, you have Scientific Linux, although I hear you have a bad habit of putting the closing the laptop without shutting it down.
Ooh, did he tell you that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bet everybody who's listening is probably cringing to that right now. Yeah, I do. I don't know what it is. I'm not real technically savvy, so... But I did use, Slackware?
Yeah.
Before I used Scientific Linux, so that was... He did all the command line, back end stuff. I just clicked the button.
How about Ubuntu?
You know, I'm not familiar with Ubuntu.
Oh, I thought you tried that before. I thought you...
I don't think so. I don't think you put that distribution on my computer. Yeah. But I did break Gmail, though, trying to get an account there once.
You broke Gmail?
I broke Gmail, yeah. So that's why he is the sysadmin for our household.
Ah, gotcha. All righty. Well, how about Mr. Parallel there? Does he have any housekeeping he wants to do?
Let me hand the phone over. Hold on.
All right.
My wife broke Google. It was awesome.
I know. Google doesn't like any of us, I don't think, anymore. But that's a rant for another day. Okay, let's do a little housekeeping here and move on. What, you got anything for housekeeping? I mean, geez, it's been so long since you were on the show.
No. I'm ready to roll.
All right. Well, cool. Let me do a couple little things. I have been making a lot. I've been doing a lot of work in the forums, making a lot of forum upgrades lately. One of them was one of the smaller ones. Really, was rearranging the meetings sub forums. We used to kind of thought that it'd be a cool thing if we gave everybody their own sub forum for their meetings sites, so that way they could still stay in the main forums where people like to hang out and have their sites separate. Well, I think that was just fracturing it too much. It was causing it to be a little bit too chaotic and mixed up from here to there. So I cleaned all that up and just made one giant general meetings forum. So it's still active and we're still doing meetings. There's still new ones coming up all the time. So there's nothing changing about it other than kind of rearranging the forums. A little reorganization, if you will. I also added some XML feeds. We added... something I've been wanting to do for a long time and hadn't had the time to do it, adding a lot of XML feeds from other sites into our forums. They come in and they're just like forum posts, as though they are posted by a user. Got a little engine that will pull that data in there, post them, allow people to reply to them, so you can get all these latest security headlines and news topics, and then have a conversation about them. How does this work? Has anybody heard of this before? I wonder if we can do this better. If we can, what happens if we change this? So allow, hopefully stimulate a little bit of conversation in the forum. So we're going to keep it minimal, though. There's so many sites we could add that could really take up a lot of room, but we're going to keep it pretty minimized. And the other big thing, and Dual, you probably would enjoy this one, I think, is we added a new forum. It's called New Projects. It's a new forum for people to come in and propose and work on projects with each other. Now, because I get a lot of email from people saying, I want to help out or I want to work on something, but I don't know what to do. I don't know what to work on. Can I help with this? Do you need any help on that? And, we do, ask for help on a lot of different things, and we do get a lot of help, but I thought it would be cool to add a forum out there. And we had a few people request this via email as well, so it looks like the demand is there, where we can post project ideas, whether they're as simple as, hey, I'd like to see an article on this, or I want to write an article on this, can someone help me, or do some research, things like that. So we put a forum out there so that people can get together and help come up with ideas for each other, and help work with each other on doing things, whether it's as simple as an article, starting a new website that's helpful, writing a new application, anything from coding down to research to whatever, all that kind of stuff is fair game in that forum. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. And
cool.
Yep. And I think that's all that I've got. So why don't we move into some email? Yeah, we've got quite a bit of email this week, as it turns out. I have one email we're going to start with from Doc Simmons. Doc Simmons says, "Dear..."
Is that the guy who does, like, exercises and stuff? And
what?
What's that? You know, he's got the afro, and he wears, like, little shorts, and...
Richard Simmons?
Richard Simmons. I'm sorry, wrong guy. Sorry. Okay, go on.
What's the name of the doctor from Back to the Future?
Back to the who?
Back to the Future.
Oh, what's that dude's name with the gigawatt?
Christopher,
oh,
was it?
Oh, man.
Christopher, no, wait a minute, Lloyd?
Just Doc, because his name's Doc.
Just Doc? Okay.
Well, something, but anyway.
I don't know.
Richard Simmons, okay.
I'm sure this is not either one of those people. How about that?
Yeah.
Doc Simmons says, "Dear BenRev dudes, I was listening to episode 165 on fishing. Over the summer, I made a fishing page from MySpace. I sent the link to maybe 30 people telling him it was the, quote, funniest MySpace ever, LOLOLOL, and about 13 people took the bait. Then I posted the information on a forum and allowed people to go nuts. The next morning, those 13 MySpace accounts were all covered in Goatsy, but here is the kicker. I used Yahoo Pages to host the phishing site. It had huge Yahoo ads all over, and it was a totally shitty look. People are dumb. Revenge is sweet. Revenge is also very petty. Can I get an amen on this one?
Well, it doesn't sound like revenge for what? I mean, it just sounds like you kind of ran a test. I mean,
well, and that's just the thing is if these 30 people were like friends of his, then yeah, I mean, a joke is a joke, and I'm fine with all that. You're not going to delete.
That's all it was.
Yeah, you wouldn't delete their stuff. You wouldn't damage anything. You know, you got to be able to take a good joke. You know, that's kind of funny. But I mean, when you're posting their docs in a forum somewhere for other people to come in, and they're posting Goatsy, that's not a joke anymore.
Well, that was did you say docs? I mean, just
well, he posted their account, MySpace accounts, and user and password, obviously, for people to come in and Goatsy it. And that's kind of lame.
Okay, I guess I get it now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Up until
I'm not familiar with the whole MySpace thing, you know.
That's
on
a whole
the, world webs and and the computation machines. So
yeah, it's definitely maybe that's their punishment for using MySpace. Possibly, I don't know. But.
Well, plus this guy, he says he put up a phishing page with an F, like he like those reels and rods and like flies and stuff. So.
Yeah, he in one a couple places he's PH and then other places F. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, posting the docs on the forum, or their docs being the users and password and the account, so that people could go see it. That's when it crosses the line. I mean, we don't allow that in our forums.
Gotcha.
We have rules against doc dropping. We don't allow people to do that because it's that's not impressive. You know, playing the joke on somebody and getting their information and then go, ha ha, look how easy it was. You got fished. I tricked you. Here's your page back. End of joke. That's how, you know, that part's fun. That's funny. No problem with that. But putting up the goatsy, I mean, what if that was a kid's page? Or what if someone's kid, oh, let me look at mommy's MySpace or whatever. Yeah. That's probably, all right, look, that was a stretch. I realized that as I said it. That was kind of dumb, but... But whatever. Oh, hey, they can't all be winners.
Just make them grow up fast, that's all.
Fast and hard.
That's right.
Oh, man. Some kid's going to grow up and end up being traumatized for that. But, yeah, that's just, to me, that's not impressive. That doesn't really do much for me. But I guess to turn some positive out of the whole thing, you know, we talked about it on the phishing episode. There were clues that should have tipped you off to that being a phishing site. I mean, you got to look at the URL up there. You got to look for, you know, if it's got Yahoo ads or whatever it is on there, make sure you're at the page you're supposed to be at.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of anti-phishing plugins and toolbars and stuff that'll help.
Yeah, IE7 has something like that now, too. I just installed it today, and it's,
yeah, so
yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I installed it last night, too.
Yeah, he schooled some noobs, so.
Yeah, schooled some noobs. Did you just say schooled some noobs?
I did. I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Email number two this week comes from Freak Mac. Freak Mac says, hey, Stank and Co. Pimp. That would be you.
Yeah.
You stated last episode that there is no way to get a virtual machine to run faster than running natively. In 99% of cases, this is true, but there is one case where it is not true. Booting Windows XP in the Parallels virtual machine is faster than natively booting into Windows on a MacBook. Now, let me stop for a second. Parallels is the name of a piece of software for Macintosh, Parallels Virtual Machine. And the tiny URL to the article he's referring to is Y24, N as in Nancy, D as in donkey, and L as in lover.
Nancy Donkey.
Nancy Donkey Lover.
That's the name of the show, yeah.
The Nancy Donkey Lover episode of Ben Radio.
Awesome.
Oh. So he says, I have no clue how the hell they do it, but there's even video on YouTube of the two booting side by side if you need to see it to believe it. I definitely didn't. Keep up the kick-ass show. Late. So, yes, Freak Mac, I went to that site. Thank you for the email, first of all. I read the article, and yes, what you stated is true, that it boots faster using Parallels, but first of all, it was on a Mac, so you're throwing in a non-standard hardware, a different piece of hardware than what we generally were referring to. We were pretty much talking about Intel, but anyway, besides that, you're talking about, the article is talking about, or had some benchmarking on different things. Booting was faster, but everything else was quite a bit slower, if I recall, if it even functioned at all. Some of the tests, they didn't run at all. I think playing Quake 4 on there didn't even work because there was no DirectX support in Parallel Virtual Machine. So, what your statement of 99% of the cases, of course, there's nothing's ever 100% of the time, right?
Right.
Hesitantly. So, I actually did ask Not Theory about this to see what he thought of it, too. And he made me realize that, yeah, actually, there could be a very valid explanation for even that boot time being faster. And CNET may not have even thought about this the more we talked about it. What happens with these virtual machines is you can actually, if you already had the virtual machine existing and you create it for the first time, you can pause that virtual machine. When you stop the virtual machine, it will basically stop and save itself where it's at. Kind of like, think of it like when you do a hibernation of your Windows desktop, for example. It hibernates. All it's doing is going to write stuff off the disk. When you pause that virtual machine, it's going to write all that stuff out to disk. And then when you go back and reboot and have it come up back in that virtual machine, all it's really doing is reloading. It's coming back out of hibernation. which even in the Windows world, everybody knows you come back out of hibernation faster. That's the point of hibernation. You come out faster because you're not doing a full boot from scratch. It does save time. And a virtual machine booting could very easily be explained because, or if, that's what happened. So that could be a very valid explanation, and their benchmarks could be simply wrong because they didn't even realize they were doing that. Does that make sense, right?
Sure.
So, and I kind of mentioned this briefly earlier. Oh, I'm gonna put you on the spot in just a second, by the way. I just thought of something. Don't belittle the fact that hardware and the drivers play a big role in this. The virtual drivers for the hardware are going to be different. So one may work better than another, may be more efficiently written than another with. So the more, let's call it common hardware for lack of a better word. Like, for example, we're generally talking about Intel. They're the predominant Intel, AMD, common large hardware manufacturers that are going to have better drivers, more developed drivers, newer drivers. Is generally going to be a little bit better than some obscure thing where it's loading generic and loading a lot of memory overhead and a lot of other stuff. So when you start throwing in different types of hardware like a MacBook, you know, that's also a factor in the whole thing. Now, how big? I don't know. You'd have to do a lot of studies on that. But to put you on the spot, like I was just saying, so it just popped into my head. I'm going to put you on the spot and say what and ask you what you think about Macintosh and Macintosh hardware and Apple is a company, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm a recent convert, I guess.
Oh, no.
We were in San Francisco not too long ago, and you pop out of Powell Street, and there it is. You know, it's glowing, and the birds are chirping, and so I picked up a G4. So, yeah, I guess this was, I don't know, 6 months ago. It was a while ago, and it's just, I love it. I love it that it's small. I'm glad I got one before Intel.
Really?
It's an elegant operating system. You know, it kind of reads your mind. And then there's Unix. It's just great. And I spend most of my time at the shell. Otherwise, I think 512 is not quiet enough for that.
512
memory? I have enjoyed it immensely.
Now, is it... See, my thing is, is it doing anything... First of all, the OS X, no doubt, I agree with, seems to be a really good operating system, very intuitive and all that. But you said you're glad you got one before Intel came out. I find that curious. Can you expand on that?
There's a few reasons. One, I think this one's a little smaller. I know it's a little thicker, but I'd rather have it, you know, a smaller footprint, you know. Also, I know the screens are glossy, right? I wouldn't buy the expensive ones. I'd probably buy a cheap, you know, the iBook or the whatever. I don't know what the new one's called. And I know those screens are glossy, and I wouldn't want that. Because I'm all over the place, inside, outside, whatever. So,
right.
And I didn't want Intel. I just wanted a, power, you know, PowerPC. And also, there's, you know, the software. It's mature. There's just tons and tons of packages. And I've got all the, you know, I've got Sync and ports. And there's so many things already developed for it. It's, you know, it's no brainer.
Yeah, software wise, yeah. But is it worth the price difference? I mean. My biggest issue is because I want one myself to play with. Nothing fancy, just a low-end machine. And when those Mac Minis came out, I was excited because I thought I'd be able to finally get a low-end cheap machine, but they're still overpriced.
Yeah,
I mean,
for what they are.
Yeah, for the equivalent hardware, I mean, for the same $600 for the iMac or Mini Mac or whatever, Mini Me, whatever they're called,
right.
I could get a pretty doggone good PC.
Well, the thing is, they seem to be well engineered. I mean, it's held up. It's been to Tokyo and back, except for a squeak in the arrow keys occasionally. It's just really solid, and it's slick. You know, there's a button underneath that you can press and light up the LEDs and tell you where your battery is. Battery life is great, by the way. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth it, and they're not that. If you're gonna, you usually get what you pay for. And I think if you can spend a little extra, I think it's worth it. Get a low end with a little more memory, maybe. You know, I had some discounts. I only paid $900 for this one. So.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. What?
$900 for that?
What's wrong with that?
Oh my gosh! I could have bought two. Oh my goodness.
What?
I'm not even willing to pay the $600 for the Mac Mini, whatever, and it doesn't even come with anything.
But it's not a laptop.
Oh, jeez.
Whatever. Dude, trust me. That is way... Your money... Everybody, listen. Your money is way better spent buying a low-end Mac notebook than buying some
high-end
Dell.
High-end Intel notebook of some kind?
Whatever.
Dell, you're HP,
way,
whatever.
You know, you've got the fast processors, just like all the Intel people, so... I think you're way better off.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're on your own on that one. that's the hard thing for me is I do like the design and the look of them. I do like OS X. I just wish they were a little cheaper. Gosh. Proprietary company. They're the Sony. They're just like I feel about Sony. Proprietary hardware, proprietary stuff that they put out. They don't want to play well with others and cooperate.
Yeah, but Sony makes crap. And so far, personally, I've found it to be high quality.
Well, they're one minor step up from Sony, but that's still... Yeah. Anyway, you can buy me one for Christmas. How about that?
Okie dokie.
Yeah. I'll be waiting by the mailbox for that. All right. So, there you go. We'll get... Every time we talk about it on the show, get everybody's opinion, there's inevitable hate mail that comes back from us. So, let's see what the feedback is from this one.
Sure.
Although, you actually defended it, and I'm the one that's going to get hate mail this time. But, you know what? Whatever. All right, our next email this week comes from Victor. Victor says, "Hi, Stan." I guess that's Stank.
Where was that?
I think that's the K next to the comma.
Vicious? Oh, there we go.
Yeah,
Hi, Stan. Oh,
no,
awesome.
Victor.
I'm still calling you Stan from now on.
I guess the comma and the K are next to each other. No, you can't call me. You can't drop my docs. I mean.
Sorry, Stan. I won't do that.
All right. So, hi, Stank. Nice show. Keep up the good work. Just writing to ask. Don't know. Maybe I missed it because I listened to the show. Can I buy a period? Hold on. I'm gonna edit this on the fly. Hi, Stank. Nice show. Keep up the good work. I'm just writing to ask. I don't know. Maybe I missed it because I listened to the show at my work. But what is not theory? I can't even fix this. What is not theories? The not theories machines. Specs on which he's running all that virtual stuff. I'm so confused.
What are not theories, machines, specs?
Okay, there you go.
He's running all the virtual stuff.
Okay. Thanks and shouts from the UK. All right, Victor. So, I did ask not theory about the specs. I kind of figured that's what you were getting at there. And not theory reports that his two laptops that he runs are both 1.0 gigahertz with 2 gigs of RAM each. RAM is the big thing because you're shaving it off for each virtual interface that you have, so more RAM is good. And he has one Pentium D, 3 gigahertz, with 2.5 gigs of RAM, the desktop that he uses. So, and he moves the images from one to the other, but mostly when I talk to him, he's always on the go with the laptop stuff. So, he also even went on to say that generally what he's doing with his virtual machines is assigning 512 megabytes of RAM to each one of them. That's what he's shaving off. And sometimes if he's running a different Linux virtual machine, that he'll even do less. I think he said he was running Nopix, or was it Nopix or Kubuntu? I think it was Nopix or something with only a 128 memory virtual machine. But he said normally any Linux, he'll just open up 256. So that's kind of a cool thing to know. So there you go.
Interesting. And also, if nobody knew, those machines are just extensions of his ghost because not there is a cadre of evil robots. So I don't know if anybody knew that.
Well, if they didn't, they know now.
Right. He's like a superior being.
You'd think he'd get more done if he was an entire cadre of robots. Oh man, I'm gonna get paybacks from that one. All right. Next email this week. Oh, where did I lost my spot here? From Sid Vicious. Sid Vicious says, "Your powers of telepathy continue to amaze me." Well, I know I amaze myself sometimes. There, Sid. It's hard being right and perfect all the time. It really sometimes it's really hard. All right. He says, "I was actually planning on writing in to ask you guys if you could do an ep on virtualization, and now I don't have to." Yeah, that was not theory's powers. And what was he, a cadre of what?
Cadre. And I think Archangel came up with that because he's there too. Cadre of evil robots because it's nutty. The dude's like...
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I'll, like, scrape all of Nampa and,
do a million,
and like, parse it for your cell phone
a million
in, like,
once.
10 minutes. What the hell.
Yep, he's juggling websites, writing programs,
yeah,
developing things.
Yeah, it's crazy.
A million things at
it
once.
It can't just be, it's not a single human.
Well, that's why he's my internet boyfriend. Sid Vicious goes on to say,
sugar daddy.
One question I've always had about virtualized systems is about combating the performance hit. Seems to me that one way to get around the performance decrease would be to run your virtual machines on a cluster. Now, I don't really know all that much about clustering or virtualization, but it seems like a logical step. I've tried to find some info on the subject with little success, and everybody I've talked to about it seems to think I'm crazy and it wouldn't work, but I just don't see why. Wondering if you guys might have any input on the idea. Anyhow, thanks for providing the great show, and keep it up. Talk to you later. Sid, P.S. shouts to everyone involved in the BenRev mentorship program. It's a good thing. And yes, the mentorship program is a good thing. Anybody who doesn't know about it already or wants to get more involved, you can email mentorship@benrev.com. That's all one word, mentorship@benrev.com. If you want to be a mentor or mentee, get involved in the program. It's very, very cool.
Yeah,
and
definitely. Props to Verbal.
Verbal's, yeah. Verbal's doing a lot of stuff as well. Juggling that in the IRC, and everybody's doing a lot of stuff, man. There's some amazing people in this community.
Was he talking about clustering for virtual machines or virtual clustering?
I believe he was talking about
virtual machines on a cluster,
on a cluster for the benefit of speeding it up or getting better power behind it, which really isn't going to work. And I did talk to Knot Theory about this as well, and you're trying to get his first question, and I'm pretty sure that what he's asking in this is about the CPU benefit, but Knot Theory asked that question if you're referring to clustering for CPU benefit or disk clustering. So we'll address both here. For as far as the CPU benefit, there's not really much to be gained because virtualization is, well, in the way we were talking about it and the way the majority of people use it is from within Windows, and you need to boot from a local drive. So you're always going to have that bottleneck of having to boot from something. You're going to be booting from your local drive. I even asked Knot Theory, you know, what about booting from a flash drive to speed it up, or booting from a bootable Linux distro like Nopix or something along those lines. And it's still got the bottom line of starting the machine up at boot, so you're not really going to do a whole lot with that. And clustering it all off, is not, you're just not going to gain that much benefit from it. However, if you're talking about disk clustering, according to Knot Theory, that's something he sees quite frequently, actually, in the business world, where response time is critical in some cases, is very important to what they're doing. It's very common for them to set up disk farms with just gigabytes and terabytes upon terabytes of hard drive, and they will set up disk clustering while they'll do striping and use those disks in such a way where they can increase the read-write performance and the throughput of data back to your virtual machines. So you can get better performance out of them once they're up and running, but as far as clustering to get some kind of increased speed or benefit from the CPU, he seems to think, and it sounds right to me, that there's not much you're going to get out of doing that.
Interesting.
So there you go, and let's see, how are we on time for this last email? We're about 30-something minutes in here. I'm going to read this quickly because I thought this was a pretty decent email. And this email comes from Novin. Novin says, "Hey there, Stank Dog. I'm a big radio fan, but currently I'm on a 3-month assignment to Indonesia."
Cool.
You ever been to Indonesia?
No.
No. All right, which leaves me well out of range of any radio stations I can understand. So I've been getting into internet radio in a big way and listening to a lot of shows. Yours is definitely one of the best out there, interesting, informative, blah, blah, blah. I only discovered you 3 weeks ago, and I've been steadily working my way back through your archives. Your most recent show about virtualization intrigued me because recently I've been getting into virtualization in a big way. I've just finished rolling out Kubuntu. That's why I had Kubuntu in my head from earlier.
Uh-huh.
I've finished rolling out Kubuntu across an organization, and I had to configure and test a custom install and then train the users in the new OS. There was no way I was touching my Gentoo install. VMware let me do all of the above in a virtual environment on my laptop. The snapshot feature let me make all kinds of crazy changes during training and then roll it back to a clean install for the next group, which is one of the things that, you know, we really emphasize as one of the coolest features. He also goes on, he says, I also use it to keep copies of various client machines on my laptop. So when someone emails me with a problem, I can play around in my virtual environment that mirrors theirs. Now, I don't think we mentioned that. That's a good idea. Figure out the best way to solve it, and then log in and fix the problem with minimal disruption and risk to the production server. Well, I don't think we mentioned that at all. I didn't think about that. That is a really good application.
Minimizing risk is a good thing.
Absolutely, and it's going to tie in very much to our topic tonight, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Our main topic. Let's see. He goes on to say, and of course it's handy to keep a Windows install for testing applications before recommending them to clients. A side effect is this, is that I can keep some games in there that run better under VMware than Wine. And didn't Wine just change its name, by the way?
Sudega, I think, is. Or maybe that's just for the games, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Under VMware than Wine, and when playing, I can just suspend the machine and, quote, pause the game at any stage or point. Then a few days later, I can resume my game. That's pretty leaf. In the time it takes for a machine to resume.
That's really cool.
That is kind of cool. Much quicker than booting up and loading a program. And actually, that's further support for what we mentioned earlier about quicker boot time. Exactly what he's saying here. So, as far as performance, there is a bit of overhead, but it is generally manageable. My laptop has a Core Duo 1.8 GHz CPU, 1 gig of RAM, and a 7200 RPM hard disk. I can run two virtual machines, Kubuntu and Win 2000, and a few apps on the core system, Gentoo, comfortably. The biggest bottleneck would be the hard disk. RAM usage is managed well, and the CPU is taxed far less than you would expect. Well, I'm glad I did read this, because that also defends what we said earlier about the hard disk being the bottleneck, and disk clustering and disk farming could, of course, speed that up.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Microsoft's Vista licensing for virtual machines is going to change things significantly. Home Basic and Home Premium will not be licensed at all for virtual machines. Nothing technically stops you, except maybe an update to their SPP?
Don't know.
But you are breaking the license by doing it. As for the other versions, you can only transfer the license once. So if you install in a VM and later wipe it and reinstall, you are now stuck. Doing it again breaks the license. Developers with an MSDN subscription can run unlimited virtual machines for development purposes with only a single license, and data centers have their own rules that I'm not clear on. So once again, Microsoft shafted their users by killing the potential to legally take advantage of a great new technology.
Yay.
Yeah, well, I've got MSDN, so fuck the rest of you. I love VMware Workstation and think it is definitely worth the money. However, if you are cheap, VMware Player is okay, but you can't create the range of virtual machines and images. One solution is to install QEMU, an open source virtual solution you didn't mention, and create machines and images you can then use in VM Player, which has much better performance. I know I've rambled on. This is a long email, and I would expect you to read it all. But maybe all out loud, but maybe something I've said would be of use or interest to your listeners. Keep rocking. Well, I definitely read it all, obviously, because there wasn't. Okay, what was it? That was only like 6 minutes or so, so it wasn't so bad. And it did have good stuff in there. That was a very good email.
Yeah.
And shouts to Indonesia. I don't know. I still get a kick out of getting emails from weird and. Well, weird places, meaning non-U.S. places I'll never go.
If it's weird, they're coming from the U.S.
Yeah, I was going to say, not weird in a negative way. Weird meaning places I never expected to receive email from. That's what I mean. All right. Well, Mr. Parallel. Can I call you Duel?
You may.
Okay. Duel, what are we going to talk about on the show tonight?
Stan, we're going to talk about... Oh, crap. You know what? I want to close my door real quick.
Why, you
so
naked?
We're going to... As we mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about risk and analyzing risk.
In terms of physical security?
Well, ultimately, it's stemming from physical security, but you can apply it to many things.
Okay. Explain.
Okay. Well, overall, let me look at my time real quick. So, overall, this is really kind of the tail end of systems engineering. Right, when you need to, for physical security systems, for example, you need to determine, right, the objectives of the physical protection system. What is it going to do? You've got to design it, and then you've got to evaluate it. If I may, right up front, I want to reference a great book, probably the definitive book, The Design and Evaluation of Physical Protection Systems by M.L. Garcia. It's the Bible, okay? Mm-hmm. So, referencing that, go buy it, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So, again, we're talking systems engineering, basic steps, right? It seems very, very simple. Now, at the end of that, the evaluation, one of the things you need to do is assess risk, right? You need to analyze the risk, and then, okay, find out what's acceptable, and find out what you can do with the resources you have to mitigate risk. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. There's going to be an equation, okay? It's not a hard one, but we were going to be as technical as possible.
Oh, man, is there going to be a quiz?
Yes.
Will this be on the test?
Yes, there will be. Oh. Yeah, it won't be bad, though.
Okay.
You'll be able to live. You'll probably be able to find these. I want to, first let's begin, and again, since it is, this is about security, right, which is near and dear to the hearts of hackers. Let's define security. You can go to Wikipedia, and I think it does an all right job, but I don't think it's really exactly correct. Security is the protection against malevolent acts, right, perpetrated by humans, bad humans, okay? That's what security is, period.
What about evil robots?
What's that?
What about evil robots?
See, robots can't actually harm humans, but they can follow their... I'm not sure.
We'll have to look into that. What about iRobot?
I haven't seen that. I don't want that crap. Security has nothing to do with safety. Safety is separate, right? I think Wikipedia actually says something about safety. That is not correct. Safety is trying to, stop harm from, natural disasters and accidents, right? That's safety. Security is protection, right? Or designing systems to protect against malevolent acts from malevolent humans. That is security. So that's out of the way.
Interesting separation. I've never heard the term separated like that before. That's new to me.
If that's new to you, change your thinking right now and change the thinking of those around you. Right? If you've got a security guard and he's, let's say he's at one of your horrible big box stores and he's going out collecting carts. No, he's a security guard. He should be doing security, not whatever the hell that is, right? That's the same thing. You need to separate security from safety. They are not the same. So make sure you spread that. Make sure you use that at your work as well. So now we've got a good definition of what security is. Let's talk about risk. Risk is a metric, right? It is a way to measure something. And it is a metric that combines, essentially, the likelihood of a malevolent act and the consequence of that act, right?
Right.
And also, here we'll be using the effectiveness of the physical protection system or the system in general, whatever you're doing, whatever you're using to protect against the act. And then using that metric, you can evaluate your resources and use them to the best cost benefit, meaning where can I use my money most wisely, money, time, people, whatever it is, resources, right, to get the maximum reduction in risk. Did that make sense?
It did, but
we'll definitely expand on it.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Well, I'm just kind of thinking that it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I probably am, but it just seems like that sometimes you can't measure risk. I mean, sometimes it feels like an intangible thing that you can't say, oh, well, the risk factor is 5 out of 10 or so. I mean, maybe in some cases you can.
Right.
And there's probably ways to do that, but is there such thing as an unforeseen risk?
That's Stank, you brought up an amazingly good point.
Hey, it happens every once in a while. There's something. I'm gonna have to stop the show and go buy a lottery ticket real quick.
Right, you're right. It is subjective, and it's you can't exactly say the risk is this. Well, you can, and you're going to try to quantify it.
Right.
But right now, it's not. There's no, like, you know, universal risk table. So, the risk of somebody tossing a brick from my window and clunking me in the head and stealing my baby Escalade.
Well, that risk is higher for me.
What's that?
I said, see, that's where subjective is the best way. That's a good way of describing it. All the crap that I was trying to say. Subjective is the best word because I'm more likely to get hit in the head with a brick than you are because people don't like me. So subjective to me,
I like you, Stank.
It's got it. Oh, I love you too. Internet
I
boyfriend
like you,
number two. Internet boyfriend number two.
And you know what? You're a good looking man. Record that, bitches.
That's gonna be remixed into a song too. But I love you too. Anyway,
it's very subjective. So your goal is right to objectify it. You want to be able to quantify risk, right, in a meaningful way.
Okay.
So if you've got something that's just it's so nebulous, well, there's got to be ways that you can, you know, define, and we'll talk about this, define your system, test your system, get some performance numbers, right? Because performance testing, that's how you're going to get actual numbers, right, that will feed and that will become the effectiveness, that will feed in this risk equation, and will actually get you a number, something solid, something to work from, right? So it's not so nebulous.
Right.
So that's what we're going to talk about. And it's really not that difficult. I mean, yes and no. I mean, to get experts in whatever field, and, you know, if you've got some big facility, if you've got some, you know, huge network that you need to secure, you know, you're going to need experts in this and that. And it's not easy. But wrapping your mind around this topic shouldn't be too hard, especially when I think, you know, all the listeners are already thinking this way. You know, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're, you know, even if they haven't, you know, put pen to paper or, you know, literally spoken about it. They've probably thought about it, you know, just in their everyday lives, you know.
Right. Well, and just on the surface, it certainly is. You know, it's not a difficult concept to grasp, and it needs to be done. But I also know that it's not exactly easy. I mean, there are like all these equations and stuff that are out there that'll help you try to do this, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's a lot of right. So again, it's not hard to grasp. It's not a hard concept to grasp, but it needs to be formalized. And there are lots of, you can go on the web, you can get a lot of books, and there are lots of ways people say, oh, here's this consequence. You know, here's a risk matrix. When it's a consequence matrix, you know, here's this equation. Here's how you do this. We call it this. And really, it's just like the security safety thing. They're all just kind of, they sort of know what they're talking about, but, you know, and then good try, good job, you know, but there's a little more to it. That's why I referenced Garcia's book that really is definitive. And this equation that we'll talk about comes from that book. It's been in use for decades. It is effective, and it's straightforward, right? The definitions, the foundation is there. The definitions are there. And the numbers will work. So let's, if I may, let's roll. You know, let's get into it now, and we'll start showing you how to assess risk.
All right, I'm going to sit back and take notes, and you go ahead and you're going to drive here. I'm going to stand back and just listen.
Yeah, well, please, you know, please ask questions. You know, if something's not clear, please let me know. So again, we're talking about system. Overall, we're talking about systems engineering, and you need to, of course, determine the objectives of your system. You need to then design that system, and then you need to evaluate it. And in that evaluation phase, you're going to want to assess risk, right, and then reduce that risk as best you can. So, given a system, the first thing you need to do, of course, is define that system. You need to characterize it, if you will, right? What kind of network do I have? What kind of connectivity is there? Who has access to it, right? What kind of computers are there? What software is running? You need to know everything about it that you can, and not just what people say exists, because often that is not the case, right?
Right.
People may say, well, we don't have a halon problem here. But you know that the halon alarm goes off, you know, twice a month, and then eventually people don't pay attention to it. And that's, I guess that's actually the issue.
I do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only reason I brought that up. That's probably safe, too. I shouldn't be talking about that. Let's talk about door alarm. Let's say this one door, right, to the knock, it's alarmed, and, you know, it goes off all the time. And eventually, you know, it's supposed to work, and we say it works, and we check a box and say it works, fine, because, you know, it goes off. But really, nobody pays attention to it, and eventually it turns off, and there's no effectiveness there. You need to know what really goes on in the system. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but actually, I do have a question or maybe a clarification. When you say system, and even in your examples so far, you've referred to computers and software, but a system is not necessarily computer even or technology even. It can be a system of any security as it applies to people living in an apartment building. Yeah, I mean anything really, right? Or is that?
And I may be a little misleading because doing all of this in the cyber realm is a little different. It's a lot different, actually.
Right.
That's a big problem, and it's still being worked on to this day because it's so different. You know, there's, you know, no delay. You know, it's really a hard problem. But when I mention computers and networks and stuff, something is, because I'm assuming most of your listeners are familiar with that.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You know? So we're going to stick with that. We're going to focus on that for the rest of the.
Yeah, I would say so. We're probably like the physical. Excuse me, like the physical protection, you know, of a data center, let's say.
Okay.
So that's what. So we'll kind of use that example.
All right. Good.
So where all your sysadmins are near smoke, you know, that's what we'll talk about. So you need to you have to characterize the facility. You have to know exactly what's going on, what really happens. You know, that door. If somebody says, yeah, well, that door it's always locked and only I have the key. Well, you know what? He kind of gave a key to this guy because he has to come in and work on this box, but it's just only once in a while, and it's just him.
Or the
you know,
locksmith.
So they don't mark it down. No, that's you need to know that.
Well, the locksmith. The locksmith might have a master key, or
yeah,
the building
exactly.
Managers. You got to think outside of the.
Absolutely, and that's a, and what's really important is that you must go and talk to people. You've got to get on site, get hands on, and talk to the experts. Those are the people who are actually doing the work. Okay, you need to go and talk to people. You need to find out exactly what's going on. You need to characterize that facility to the utmost. Next, you need to, and this is a difficult problem, but there are resources that can help you, and that is defining the threat. Right. So, what am I worried about? Or better yet, who am I worried about? You've got to determine who, you know, what the adversary is going to look like. Who's going to do bad things to you? So, if you've got a data center, you're probably worried about insiders. That's a big problem and another show unto itself. But that's what you need to do. You need to define, okay, what's my threat? Who am I going to, or at what level am I going to protect against? All right. If you're a small ISP, or you know, you're a little CLEC, are you going to worry about a nation state going after you? Probably not. You're probably not worried about Titan Rain. Okay. You know, if you're
wait a minute, worried about what?
Titan Rain, the Chinese hackers.
Oh.
Time Magazine. You ever heard of that? If you guys haven't read about Titan Rain, look into it. It's really interesting. China's doing a lot of stuff. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in Time. So if you're a bank, you probably got a more sophisticated adversary. You know, maybe organized crime, right? You know, who knows? You've got to protect against. You know, a lot of people want money, so you got to protect against a higher level adversary. If you're just a Joe Schmo and you need to protect your boxes in your house, well, you know, sturdy doors, good locks, maybe an alarm system, not really going to do much good for you, but, you know, what's your adversary? Common criminal. So you need to define that threat so you can determine effectiveness, once you determine the effectiveness of your system, you can say, okay, given this threat, I need to protect this. Here's a protection I have. I can use this much money to change my, you know, level of protection, up my level of protection, because my threat is you know, this sophisticated. So you must define your threat. And then finally, define the target or identify the target. What are they going to attack? What's important? What's most important? As far as risk goes, what's acceptable if it's lost, right?
Right.
If your NTP server goes down, you know, that may be, actually, that may be really bad, but, you know, if DNS goes down, that's really bad. So what are you going to protect?
Well, is it a factor at all, the cost of replacement of something? Like if you lost a server or if you lost something was stolen, the cost to replace that?
Absolutely. In fact, and that's, we'll talk about that when we get to mitigation, you know.
Oh, okay.
Insurance.
All right, I'm jumping the gun here.
I'm sorry?
I said I was jumping the gun there, I guess.
Well, no, that's good to point out, because and that's why you're identifying the targets. That's where you're identifying the valuable assets. So when you get to that point and say, well, we can just replace it, okay, and that risk is acceptable. So you have to know that up front, right? When you're defining the system, when you're determining the objective, you need to know that when you get to that point. So that's why this is the legwork. This is the, you know, not the hardest work, not the, you know, the most work, but this is the, you know, building the foundation.
What kind of time frame does it take to do this part?
Depends on the system.
Ah, of course.
If it's nationwide, long time, right? Mm-hmm. If we're talking infrastructure,
right, right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, but if you're talking, you know, you're renting
small
room downtown with your Astro servers, you know.
Right.
Not long.
All right, so whatever, case-by-case basis.
Right. So now you've got all of these things, and you need to design the system. Okay, I've got this stuff. I'm going to design the system. Here's the money I've got. Here's the best technology I've got. I've looked into it as best I can. Hopefully you're designing things before it's built, right? You're not kind of adding on to stuff. We're not going to talk about the specific things when you design the system, being detection, delay, and response. There's actually an article in a really good magazine called VR that you can check out, and it talks about those.
Mm-hmm.
You need to design that system, and then once it's designed, once you've got it, you need to evaluate it. Now, there are tools, there are worksheets, you know, like spreadsheets, Excel spreadsheets. Of course, there are books, you know, there are guides that can help you in assessing your physical protection system, and use them. Check them out. Make sure they've got good pedigree. Make sure they make sense. Make sure they know the difference between safety and security. Make sure they're not just, you know, looking into your pencil and checking off a box, because that's not what it's about.
But I bet that's very common, though.
It really is. And knowing these things, here's the thing, you know, everybody that's listening, you know, actually BinRev in general is going to enable you, empower you in this way. But knowing these things is going to, you know, give you that leg up. It's going to give you, you know, that extra sophistication when you're going through an interview or when you're dealing with people who are, you know, trying to sell you their security product, or when you're trying to secure anything from your box at home to a NOC, right? This, you know, and BinRev does that, again, in general.
Well,
but this right here, just knowing these things will help you as well.
Well, I know right now, I mean, if I ever am in a situation where I need a vendor to come in and do a security assessment for me, you know, one of the questions I'll ask in the interview or up front is, you know, explain to me the difference between security and safety. And if they can't do that, thanks, God bless, good night, bye-bye.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot out of this, absolutely. There's already a lot of good information. I'm going to try to shut up because we got, like, I don't know, 20-some more minutes to go, and I'm getting interested in this. I'm getting more and more interested in this as I hear.
I'm glad. You know, to be sure, there are systems integrators out there who can make the systems work together, because, you know, obviously they can. You know, if you can leverage the other, that's a definite positive. But you must realize security is separate. Security is important. Security is not just a cost, or it will cost you, right? It is a cost, obviously, but it's not a, it shouldn't be, and it is, I know, you know, people who are making the decisions and have the money, man, I got to pay for security, this sucks, because nothing's ever happened.
We don't see a direct, know? Immediate benefit from it, is the common
right.
thing, is you can't go and say, I need you to budget me X number of dollars. From the business standpoint, you know, and I've seen this happen before. Sorry to jump in on this, but
no, it's fine.
So many times I've seen it happen where they just will not justify the budget for you to pay for. I've even seen, you know, requests for a simple backup server, extra hard drives and stuff turned down because, you know, we don't need that. We're not going to get any benefit from that. We can't justify spending that money on a disk farm of some kind because they can't
right.
see an immediate benefit. However, you know, 6 months down the road, and I'm telling you this from actual experience, when someone accidentally drops a table space and you lose half your database that was sitting there and you don't have good backups of it somewhere, you don't realize the cost that it will take to try to recover, if you can recover, the data. I mean, I can't go into too much detail, but I was in a situation where it was so bad that they ended up having to send the hard drive off because there were no good backups to one of those data recovery, and that is not cheap. So
right.
that's a factor in a way of measuring, you know, to go back to the metrics of the thing, measuring what is the potential cost of recovering from situations like this versus what you would have spent on it. And that's the way you have to sell this from a business standpoint to upper management and to the higher-ups in your company. You have to show them, yes, we're asking for this much money now so that we don't have to ask for this much money later.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to get profit from this, but it's necessary. And then here's where security can leverage safety, and this is the safety of your data from an accident, right?
Right.
Or again, security leveraging that from an insider wiping your database. Well, I've got secure offsite backups now, so
mm-hmm.
way to go, ass. I've got this shit, and you're in jail, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and you've got to convince people of that. You've got to sell. You really got to sell this because it's important. You know, good security is important. So you've determined the objectives of the physical protection system. You've designed it. You've implemented it. Hopefully, you've done this before implementation, and now you need to evaluate it. And I'm going to drop the risk equation right on you right now.
Uh oh.
So we can reference this throughout the rest of the talk here. So the risk equation is, and what should I do about that?
Yeah, is this going to translate over the radio well, though?
Yeah, it's not big. It's not bad. It's really not bad at all.
Okay.
And I'll talk about the terms and their definitions, and actually that'll help you because you'll see the other definitions when you look into this. Risk, R, equals P sub A, which is the probability of attack, times, and there's actually parentheses here, 1 minus P sub I, which is the probability of interruption, that's going to be the effectiveness of the system, close paren, times consequence. Okay?
Okay.
Now, there's some other terms that can be in there. We're not going to talk about that right now.
All right.
So, again, risk equals PA times paren 1 minus PI, probability of interruption, close paren, times consequence.
Okay.
C, which is C. So, you'll often hear, here we're using probability of attack, and that is, you'll often hear likelihood. Right, you'll hear that in safety as well, the likelihood of an event.
Okay.
But it's the probability that you will be attacked. Consequence. What term is used? I guess consequence is pretty much used. No, there's something else. Oh, crap, what do they use?
Consequences? Repercussions?
Well, no, severity.
Okay.
Often you'll see severity. You know, and again, it's tied more to safety. What's the severity of the event? You know, Katrina is really bad. That's a 1. All of these terms are quantified from 0 to 1.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So everything, it's their probabilities, right? And your
right.
consequences from 0 to 1, 0 meaning doesn't matter, 1 meaning the worst thing that can happen.
Okay.
And your effectiveness, there's actually the probability of interruption. That's the probability that any node in the physical protection system will stop an adversary, or I'm sorry, not stop an adversary, but will interrupt, detect, and tell somebody, hey, something bad is going on at that point in this attack timeline, and that is, again, a probability. And there are actually more terms in there, but we're simplifying it to that. R equals PA times quantity of 1 minus PI.
Yeah, and I've dealt with some equations like this, so this is just kind of a personal tip that I've always used is, in measurements like this, to me, and maybe to the listeners, it's easier for me to think of these. Now, hear me out before you, I know you're going to say this is wrong, but I like to think of some of these as percentages. Now, I know it's 0 to 1, but quite honestly, if you're at a 0.995, which is very, very high, you know, very possible it's going to happen, versus say, let's go back to 0.5, which is in the middle. Well, that's a 50%, the way I like to think of it, only in my head. So it's a lot of times it's easier for me personally to think of things in terms of percentages in my head. The only reason you do with the 0 to 1 on paper is for the mathematics involved, so that you can actually do these multipliers through each other within reasonable numbers, so that the multipliers don't have this overbloated effect. By staying with numbers within a certain range between 0 and 1, it makes the math more applicable. It makes you able to, again, better measure these things. But if it's easier for you to think of it, you know, if it's easier to visualize this in your head when you hear about something that has a 0.05, it's really only a 5% chance that it might happen.
Right, absolutely.
So
that's absolutely correct. Yeah, they are percentages.
Yeah.
0 to 1, that's a percentage. So, yeah. And that's how you'll talk. That's how you talk to people about it. Well, the consequence of this event is, you know, is 90%. That's a real bad.
Right.
That's you know. So we've got our equation, and did that translate? I hope it did.
I think so.
It's real straight. Again, I'll get one more time just in case, and I'll literally talk about, you know, literally here are the characters. R equals PA paren 1 minus PI. Close paren times C.
And that's actually real world.
Yes.
You'll see that
again,
on anytime you have a security assessment, you're going to see that.
Yes. And that's actually simplified. So if you're going to, and that's fine depending on your system, but there are other terms there as well. But I thought that's enough that should go over radio.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, so we've got our risk equation. Now we need to start measuring risk. So how do you do that? You've got to assess your system effectiveness, and the best way to do that is by performance testing. And just like characterizing your facility, don't just take the word of the vendors, right? You're going to have to go and actually determine how it works, how effective it is, in its implementation. You've got a sensor. It will, you know, detect a 6-foot human walking, 85% of the time. Well, I'm not talking about what kind of sensor it is, but, you know, so you have this sensor is at 85% in day, at night, when it's warm, when it's cold, you know, when it's 10 feet off the ground, when it's 8 feet off the ground, how is it implemented? And then how effective is it in that implementation? So you've got to determine that. And the best way is to, and I'm not, you know, going to go into statistics because I don't know off the top of my head. You know, I'd have to go back and look at my college textbooks, I guess. You've got a performance test. You've got to, you know, walk past that sensor 30 times and see how well it works with some confidence.
Well, and that actually brings something else to mind, too. Isn't part of this, and it goes back to what you said earlier about taking their word for who's got the keys to the thing, or that something goes off all the time and it's not a problem, or we've only got this software installed, we don't have anything else. There's actually inherently some auditing part of this job where you have to actually verify and prove all this. Otherwise, it's like you said, I think you said this at the beginning, you used the term check marks on a clipboard or something. You're just going down a checklist on a clipboard, just, oh, really? That's what you got? Check, check, check. You're not really doing so much the analysis. You're just taking their word for it. You have to actually do some auditing and test a lot of this stuff yourself inherently to the process. Is that right?
That's a really good point. It's amazing how much you will learn about your system. It's amazing how much even, you know, customers will come to us, and it's just going through the process, not even getting to the point where we're making the calculations and talking about mitigation. You get just going through the process, and they learn so much.
Right.
You know, people not talking to other people in the organization. You know, people finding out what really happened, managers finding out what really goes on. You know, some may be bad, not all the time, but absolutely, you learn so much. You learn so much. It's amazing what a good process can do.
Cool.
So what we're talking about now. You've got your you know what kind of facility you're dealing with. You've got your threat. You know what's important in your system. Now you need to find the effectiveness of that system. So you go and you're testing. You find, okay, this really works. Yes, this door locks automatically every time. That's going to be your PI. So in your equation, you've got your PI now, right? And that is going to be, again, it's simplified.
It's kind of tough to translate into radio, I know.
Yeah. I guess, right, because I know everybody's thinking, well, there's lots of sensors, there's lots of layers of security. Well, yeah, and again, this equation is simplified. I guess the best way I can explain it is that you want to determine what's that PI, that probability of interruption, what is going to be the effectiveness of that system from that adversary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then use that as that number and use that from your tests. Right, get that number from your tests, and I'll leave it at that. That is a simplification, hopefully not an oversimplification.
Well, there is like I'm kind of thinking in the back of my head, that's fine to test. Let's use your sensor example.
Right.
You can walk past it and test it all you want, test it in the daytime, nighttime, all that stuff that you said, and let's say you come up with 0.85. You said 85% earlier. You come up with a 0.85.
Right.
But that's just the one individual sensor, and there are layers of security. That's a sensor on the first corner of the hallway, and you have to walk down three hallways to get to the data center.
Right. And
so
I guess
it's 85.
PI is actually a product of the probabilities of detection of each of those sensors, of each node in that physical protection system. So, yeah, we can do that. So basically you're going to be multiplying all of those numbers.
Exactly. So it may be 85 individually, one at a time. Each one has an 85% chance. But the chance of you making it through all three of them is a lot harder.
Right. So there we go. So that kind of fills you in. That kind of gets the rest of your system. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So
that I understand what you mean by oversimplifying it, but
okay.
We have to do that for radio, and I think our listeners understand that.
Yeah, and I hope it's not painful to reading off an equation on radio. It's got to be just horrible radio too.
Well.
So thank you for putting it. So now you've got your PI. So in that risk equation, now you've got R equals PA 1 minus PI times C, PA times 1 minus PI times C. You've got your PI. You've got that term. That's the effectiveness of your system. The probability of attack, this is a really easy one. If you want to just assume that you're going to be attacked, you can make that a 1. Right, and as you probably should, if you're going to talk about risk, you might as well say, okay, well, let's say we are. Well, it depends on the threat.
What is that threat level red or whatever they call it?
That's called a joke. when I mentioned threat and about resources, this is where that comes into play. When you want to determine the probability of attack, okay, you've got your threat now. What's the possibility, right? What's probability that they are going to, you know, hit my facility. How are you going to know that? Right? You can look at crime statistics. You can talk to the cops. I guess if you've got some national infrastructure, you can, you know, they've got intelligence, obviously. They, you know, they've got ways to quantify that. But, you know, for most of the real world, it's not an easy problem. So again, you've got some tools. There are crime stats you can look at. You can talk to cops. You can talk to security companies. There are private security companies who know what's going on. PIs, maybe, I don't know. But there are ways to find out, okay, is this a good area or not? Am I going to get whacked? You know. Or again, you can just say, okay, I'm going to assume that this is going to happen, and move on with your equation from there. So you can use a PA of one that actually makes it, it's called conditional, meaning that, yes, I am going to be attacked, and it essentially drops out. So then you'd have R equals 1 minus PI times C. Consequence, that's the last term to figure out. You've got your target, and this will bring in what you mentioned earlier right here, Stank.
Okay.
Or we will after this, I should say. You've got your target. You've got it's just a hyper-important server. If somebody comes in and, you know, beats it to death with a baseball bat like Office Space, that's the worst thing that can happen to my company, right? And that's how you need to determine this, right? What's the worst thing that can happen to whoever, this customer, this company, you, what's the worst thing that can happen? Me, the worst thing that can happen is anything that happens to my wife.
Just so precious.
So you need to determine that, and that, again, is like you said, sank a percentage. So if somebody going gangsta on your server is the worst thing that can happen, that's a one. Okay? And that essentially drops out as well. Probably it's not what you're going to be. Most people probably won't be working with a one. You're probably going to have graded consequences for multiple targets.
Right. So would you have a different equation for each target, or?
Yeah, you would. You would have what's the risk?
Is it an overall measurement of overall security for, like, your entire data center or site? Or is it, like, what is the overall ratio or the overall measurement of our data center versus the overall measurement, let's say, of losing your servers in your data center, or overall possibility of losing your telephone lines leading into your data center? Are those two separate things? I mean, one's going to affect the other, but...
Right.
They're two totally different targets.
How do I explain this? And that's a great, great question. And, you know, I've done it a lot. How do you explain it? And I've done it, well.
I mean, it seems like they would stack. Like, the chance of it affecting your phone lines coming into your building is definitely going to take down your data center. So the data center would incorporate that.
Right.
However, the phone one would be separate. It doesn't incorporate the other data center risks, like that it might be catch on fire inside of there. No, it's got its own separate risks, like a tractor running over the telephone pole and knocking it out, and you lose communications. It seems like there's independent ones, yet they are at the same time can be intertwined sometimes.
Okay, and I've got my easy out, and that is it depends on the system.
They're out too,
right? So, and it's all those things you mentioned, and they're all bad guys. It's a bad guy with a tractor, and it's an arson causing a fire.
Wow, true.
It depends on the system. So, let me make up an example here.
Okay.
If you do have, if your, you know, your team, your trunks coming in are important, and they've got their own security, right? Even if it is being underground and it's, you know, or in a locked vault, whatever it is, you would calculate the risk of somebody attacking that.
Right.
Right? And then if you've got let's say you're, and that's a problem because it's a little, it's kind of nebulous getting into the cyber stuff, like your connectivity, right? Risk of your connectivity. Well,
I'm envisioning, you know, like you're in a big office building in New York, or well, just an office building anywhere, and
right, okay,
the building controls the incoming phone lines and all the trunks and stuff is separate and independent from your data center on the 12th floor,
right?
Which has its own card swiping and its own physical security and its own, you know.
Right, and they are interdependent, and that is part of calculating the overall system risk, and you can do that. I wouldn't recommend that right now. Let's just talk about, let's look at some simple systems, and let's look at calculating the risk for your target or targets, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it is your POP or this important server or the room that's in the data center, because you've got undoubtedly you've got some servers that are more important than others, and what are the risks, you know, how do you use your resources to protect those individual servers, well, as well as using your resources to protect the entire room. Well, we'll simplify that right now. Well, okay, let's protect the room first, right?
Yeah.
And if you want to, you know, then just break it down right now. Interdependencies, off-site systems and how that affects your risk, we won't deal with that right now.
Okay.
Is that okay? Is that a...
Yeah, well, I think I know what you're saying.
Yeah, that is absolutely a systems engineering problem, and that's way more than I've prepared for and way more for a radio show.
Yeah.
Right now we want to, right, because that's, you know...
Well, there's a lot of decisions to be made there.
Yeah.
From a lot of different people.
That's... Hence, you know, if you're going to protect an infrastructure, it's a great question.
Right. Well, and it's not one we can finish up in these last 5 minutes. So we'll back off that one.
More advanced.
Yeah. All right. So, where do we go here with the last 5 minutes? How do we summarize all this? How do we wrap all this up?
Well, that's so you've got whatever system you have, right? That's whether it's protecting a server, or protecting a room, right? So you've got the probability of attack, right? You've got your system effectiveness, and you've got your consequence, right?
Right.
And that's going to get you risk. So now, again, let's say protecting the perimeter of this data center, the integrity of this data center. Given those terms, you calculate risk. Now you have, okay, the risk of this bad guy coming in and lighting fire to this place and setting off the Halon alarms is this amount, right? So now you need to use that number, use the work you did up front, characterizing facility, determining all those things, designing the system, and then using the resources that you have to improve security. How do I say this? You want to get the best cost benefit out of your resources. So if you can spend a small amount of money and get a large increase in security, right, to essentially decreasing risk, you want to do that. And that's what risk enables you to do.
Well,
so you calculate the risk, right, I guess this kind of goes back to your question.
All right, I think maybe I have a good, I'll try. You tell me if this is what you're, if this
right.
is a good example. Let's say, like, my example earlier of two different areas of attack, or two different risks that you're looking at. The risk of your phone connection to the building going out, which therefore disrupts your business, versus the chance that your server... an employee breaks into your server and erases the data off of it. Okay, two different things. Well, if you can stop the first of those examples, if you can lower the risk of your phone lines being cut off by simply putting a $5 lock on the door to the room, you have to determine that using that ratio versus spending $50,000 to add a card swipe system on that lab to allow certain employees in and out of it or not. You've got to make a decision of how to spend that money to best lower the risk of all of the possibilities that you have in front of you.
Perfect.
Is that right? Is that good? I mean, if you can spend a $5 to, and that'll lower your overall risk of a lot of different things, or actually lower your risk on two or three different things since they're interrelated, that's the decision, and that's why you do the analysis to figure out how best to apply your budget and your resources to lower the overall risk by addressing the ones that are most severe with the best application of funds available.
Absolutely. That's perfect. Well said.
Pulled that right out of my ass.
Well, that's great, and that's what it is, you know. And as far as you know, the boundaries of your system, you know, where to calculate risk and where to spend money, you know, that's going to again, it's going to
right. It's
subjective.
I hate
to say that, and it is my own, and I'll take it right now. You know, that's what you're going to have to determine. That's what you're going to, when you go out and you get that PI, right, and you calculate, you go through whether it is from the lines coming in all the way to the one server, you know, you need to determine that. Where, you know, you can put all of it all into one big giant system and calculate, I've got this one risk number for my whole, you know, WAN.
Right.
You know, that's, you can do that. But I don't recommend it.
Yeah, it's a case-by-case basis, like you said, of what's best for
you.
And I think that's the best way to wrap the whole thing up, because we're not going to leave ourselves much time here to close out. Is that...
Really? It's gone already?
It's gone that quick, man.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, and I know it's oversimplified. If anything, familiarization with the terms is going to be powerful for you, and knowing, okay, this is generally how this is what risk is about, and this is how I can calculate it, you know, and try it out on a simple system, right? Try it out on something, your computers in your home. Try it.
All right. Well, and again, a lot of the terminology and stuff is something that you should at least be aware of and know about. Even if you don't do one yourself or don't find yourself in the position, you at least have that knowledge now to know what you're looking for in an assessment. If somebody else does it, you'll be able to spot the flaws, and you'll know you're not going to get screwed because you know more about what they're doing now and what to expect from them. So you'll
know. A primer. This is going to get you ready. There's a lot more to this, way more than I know. So, but this should help everyone.
All right, well, let's jump into some shouts here to close out the show. I'll stall and go first a little bit. I'm going to give shouts to everybody in the DDP. Kind of that friendship thing earlier, you know, I got to give shouts to Acidus, to Alonka, good friends of mine. I mean, so many people. And, you know, I'm going to give shouts to the moderating team because I don't do that nearly enough. And right now, as you're listening to this, I'm actually out of town. Again, for work, I'm quite frequently out of town, and they're running the site. They're running the forums and everything, so big shouts to them. They're doing such a great job, and I lean on them so much, so I appreciate everything that they're doing. And I'll cross into your shouts with one I know you'll back me up on, and that's our good friend Bland Inquisitor.
Oh, yeah.
The Bland Inquizzle Nizzle Nipple Flipple.
That's awesome.
What else you got?
Oh, yeah, well, I want to give shouts to Mrs. Parallel.
Oh, yeah.
And you threw me for a loop. She came into the, like, I'm in the middle of the stuff. She came into the room, kind of a little disarming. Flash. So, yeah, big shouts to my wife. Thank you for marrying me. And like to give shouts to you, Stank. I love you, Stank. I think you do so much for the community. You probably don't get thanked enough.
Oh,
also, big shouts to Hacksaw Pink Dugan. Who? He already did that. Yeah, Nothir and Nottis and White Sword and VH Slip and the Phoenix Crew Logic and just so many people. The scene, you know, the scene really is good. You know, there's some bad things that have happened and bad people, but for the most part, it is just like, I don't mean this in a religious fashion, but like the biblical way, it's there's good. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a good in a man, tart or evil. The community, the hacking community, is good.
and getting better, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And getting better. Our site of the week this week is aboutus.org. It's a wiki page that has lots of information about different websites out there. Kind of got some Who Is stuff. It's got some summaries, screenshots, Alexa information. Nice little place to go find out about websites.
And dualisanoob.com.
Dualisanoob.com.
N-O-O-B.
Japan. Japan dot.
Huh?
Is it Japan dot?
Oh, there's, yeah, Tokyo.tools.
Tokyo, I'm sorry,
Tokyo. You pimped that already, but, my,
oh, okay.
You know, I just...
I still like,
you know,
it, though.
I don't pin my site, yeah. You know, so, hey, what the hell, I'll take advantage. And hopefully there's something there that somebody might be able to use. That's my only goal.
And the picture of the Tokyo chicks is worth it for me.
Yeah.
Email us for feedback of any kind to radio@benrev.com. Closing music this week is MC Lars, a track called Hurricane Fresh. I don't think I've used this before, but if I did, you're going to hear it again. And, Duel, my friend, thank you for being on the show. Yes, I love you, too.
Thanks, Tank.
And tell everybody that we're going to see him next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
So get crunked up and don't ask why. Post-rap, post-punk, post-Kurt Cobain, post-Cool Moe, post-House of Pain. Chuck D told me that I had to be me, so I bought the Public Enemy CD. I ripped one track in MP3 till Lars Ulrich came after me. I said, it's me, your lost nephew. He said, no way, that can't be true. I kicked him with my Converse shoe all the way to Timbuktu. A forfeit Ulrich, sad but true. He lived there for a year or two. He mastered puppetry alone. Justice for Sean Fan and clones.
But that's fresh.
My dad's named Bob, he toured with me when a UK label put out my CD. I got mad props from the BBC, but hip-hop heads still don't get me. So I take a chance, I rhyme what, but so what? I like James Brown and Beyonce's butt. Whatever your race, all friends to you. And rent to Spike Lee, Netflix too. And I still rap shows and try to dance. Still rock Simpsons underpants. And I still like Rush and Dr. Dre. I still keep bumping N.W.A. I get fresh on the mic like a milkman on duty. So burn his disco to the ground and baby shake that booty. I attack the track like a Steve Seagal movie. 3D fresh, not 2D fruity.
But that's fresh. No, that's fresh, that's fresh, yet fresh. No, that's fresh, that's fresh, I get fresh. No, that's fresh, yet fresh. No, that's fresh. No, that's fresh. No, that's fresh, yet fresh. No, that's fresh, I get fresh. No, that's fresh, yet fresh. No, that's fresh.
Oh, 05, so live, I've been doing this for years. Making money cause I'm funny with this music of the spheres. And I dance, hey, watch me dance. Goofy MCs can't be me, even if they had the chance. Pandora, have you seen Persephone? Hades rapies got me going like KRSONE.
Why is that?
I don't know. MCs act like they don't know. I poison this track with a scorpion flow.
Because I rock the mic like a hurricane. Because I